Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is the Zero Point Radio Show through BBS Radio. My background is in mystical teachings and modern psychology, but I kind of left that behind a few years ago because of what's happening in the world. The more one wakes up to what's going on in the world, the more insane it is. It's like we're being run by a group of psychopaths and perverts and just terrible things. Some people call it the synagogue of Satan. The satanic people have actually taken over our society, and they're conducting all these terrible things among the population, from the inoculation to the chemtrails to the genetically modified foods. Everywhere we go, it's unbelievable what's happened. I've been away from the show for a while, and I find it so overwhelming what is happening that it's hard for me to even be on here and address these issues. And I've been fortunate. I've had my co-host Dee on, and she's been managing the show by herself for the last while.
Well, kind of, sort of, Christopher.
Kind of, sort of.
I had help. I had lots of help.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, we need to try to keep it going, and we want to tell the readers, the listeners, that our shows are going to continue to be archived free, so anyone can download it and share information from the show as widely as possible. And, oh dear, how are you, Dee? Well, I think we're getting rain here this afternoon. It's just starting to come in, and I believe that this is all their weather modification.
Well, I'm sure it is, but I got to tell you, from what just came down here in the last hour, those clouds have got to be empty by now, so you shouldn't get much.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I don't trust the weather anymore. It's like,
well, you can't, I was watching last night, I think I told you earlier, I was watching the cloud formations rolling in, and this was to be expected. It was on the weather reports, oh, clouding overnight and possible showers and yada, yada. But when they come in stripes, right, the clouds are coming in like rippled.
Yes.
They're being pushed.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that on a show that was sent out by the Chemtrail Vancouver.
Yeah.
Showing how the styrated waves in the clouds were really due to HARP interference.
Oh, yeah, and you can see it very clearly. And our guest who will be joining us throughout the show will have a lot more to say on that, I'm sure. And, of course, you, as someone who has delved very deeply into the topic of chemtrails. Now, there's a couple of sneaky things I want to say before I forget to say them, and I will if I don't say them now.
Okay.
Now, if you recall last year, I was saying that, you know, where are the flight plans for these planes that are, you know, flying over and leaving these trails? Where are they? Where? How can you say these are commercial jets when they aren't going in the direction of any public airport anywhere?
No, they're not.
And when they're zigzagging across the sky, what's that, a new holding pattern? You know, so I was saying that stuff last year. Well, now I'm hearing a new little trick they've come up with, and that is to outfit said commercial jets with said chemtrails so that they can say, those are contrails, and actually prove it with flight plans.
Yeah.
Maybe these buggers were listening to us, but quite frankly, you know, if you've got this stuff coming down and affecting your air quality and you have your air quality tested, you're going to find it. They can't hide it. You know, they can do whatever they want, but when you're tasting aluminum and barium and God knows what else on your tongue when you go outside, and when you start choking when you go outside, you don't have to see a chemtrail.
No. No, you don't.
You know, and you know, I had a friend over here a while back, and I said, have you ever heard of chemtrails? And he says, no.
Really?
Oh, okay. So I just put the word chemtrails into Google.
Yeah.
8.3 million hits.
Yeah, really.
In like 0.3 of a second.
Yeah. bring our guest in because this is her favorite topic. Asanae is there in Vancouver, and she's been monitoring, keeping control of the Vancouver Skywatch and the BC Skywatch. Hi, Asanae, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm having a hard time with everything, to be honest. A really hard time with keeping up the battle against these psychopaths.
It gets overwhelming. It really does get overwhelming. And for me, sorry to butt in, but
no.
For me, the thing is that people get burned out without seeing some kind of result. And it's very, very hard to see people walking around in complete ignorance of what's happening when there's so much proof abounding everywhere. You know,
yeah.
It's like you don't have to be a rocket scientist to dig this stuff up. It's there.
Yeah.
At any level of knowledge that you want to have, it's there. And it's available for now.
Yeah.
For now.
Yep.
So it's getting to the point, isn't it, where if we don't learn it and share it now, we won't be able to because they're cutting all that stuff out. And now I've been reading in the last week how people who are journalists, alternative journalists, and any mainstream journalist who dares to cross the line and tell truth these days gets what? Well, maybe a drone attack in the back of your Mercedes?
Yeah.
Yeah, even though I believe that was a false flag event. As among other things, but that.
Well, whatever it was, it served its purpose, and somebody's definitely dead. They can't even identify the remains.
Yeah, that's why I don't believe it was really him.
Well, it could have been.
Yeah, there's always that was a thought that crossed my mind is, you know, could he go into hiding and then they just make a deal with him and say, dead, or you're going to be really dead.
Yeah, well, see, here's the interesting thing, and for those who don't know, we're talking about Michael Hastings.
Yep.
Who was a reporter for such notable tomes as Rolling Stone and different mainstream magazines that have a tendency to get controversial. And he was doing an article right then about the FBI, and he had come out and said in an interview, perhaps more will be coming. And he had written books, and he had brought things to their knees, and he was getting to the point where he was investigating stuff that could very easily get him killed.
Yeah.
So if I were him, and I had his kind of money, what would I do? Well, gee, I might arrange my own, quote, death, unquote.
Yes, which is what I've heard suggested about him.
Yeah. Well, you know, one can only hope.
Yeah.
One can only hope. Change
the subject, but I'd like to just get back to the point of how do you cope with all this negative news. Myself, I've just taken up meditation and mantras and chanting, and I found that, you know, when we explore the dark side, we also have to sort of balance it out you know, the not so much the light side, but yeah, I guess it's the light because that's really what you're meditating is on the light. And it does help coping with all this stuff, I found, anyway, for me.
Yeah, I actually teach it, and I teach de-stressing methods. And exactly what you're saying is very, very important, very, very important, because what people are finding is this feeling of being overwhelmed, especially when they start to feel more and more marginalized because there's a polarity, and that polarity in society is building. You know, and each side thinks the other side is crazy. You know, you're crazy if you don't know, and you're crazy if you do know. So where are you sane? You know?
Yeah.
Where do you get to be sane? I mean, you've got to stand up for something or you'll fall for anything. So people are getting into a very confused and it's almost an altered state of mind.
Yeah.
Psychologically, it's an altered state of mind because they're polarized. Their minds are polarized and they're ping-ponging back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, we're supposed to be pinging.
And looking at the bright side, too, this is a challenge in terms of the stuff that a society can throw at you. So we're sort of the front lines of learning how you deal with groups that come at bigger groups, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if societies in the past had to deal with the stuff that we're dealing with now.
They've always had to deal with it.
So these are parts of the growing process.
They've always had to deal with it to one measure or another, but this is the greatest measure anyone's ever had to deal with, I think, unless, as some mystics say, the whole thing repeats, you know, from beginning to end, from Genesis to Exodus, repeats and repeats cyclically. There's a lot of metaphysical writing and philosophy that talks about that, including the yogic and Hindu variety. You know, it's really kind of interesting that we are in this situation, but I'll tell you what I think helps the most. And this goes even beyond meditation, because meditation is sort of like letting the air off the basketball for a lot of people, because they don't meditate necessarily to solve anything. They're meditating to relax and de-stress. And consequently, it's not a learning experience, but rather a relaxation experience. And as good as that is, and as needed and necessary as that is, you go one step farther when you prevent the stress in the first place. And this is how I prevent it. Okay? What's really overwhelming about this is that you see it happening and you want to do something and you try to do something and you keep trying and trying and trying, and you look around you and you go, my God, what's wrong with people? Because they're not getting it. And it's that they're not getting it that is really the most stressful. So what I do is I say to myself, if I get stressed out about that, I go, you know what? It's not my responsibility to fix it. My responsibility to myself and to the planet, to everyone, is simply to tell the truth as much as I can and let it fall where it may. And where I learned that was in Reiki, which, of course, is energy. And I'm a master at Reiki, too. And in Reiki, what the Reiki practitioner does is they initiate a flow of energy that is pure chi, life energy. And they put it into the body, but they are not allowed in the practice to put any intent behind it. And with meditation, you're taught the same thing, especially with mantra meditation. You're taught not to pay any attention to what the meditation does, because it's going to do what you need. It's going to go where you need it. Right? Mm-hmm. So meditation is very, very valuable, because it will go where you need it. And then if you add to that the simple fact, I am not responsible for the state of the world. I'm only responsible for me and what I do in it. And that brings me to another huge point that people really need to understand. There's a lot of people out there that think this is a big battle between good and evil. And, of course, they automatically, everybody puts themselves on the right side of that argument, no matter which side that is. They all think they're on the right side. Okay? Problem with that is that the battle is not out there. It's inside. It's the battle between the dark side and the light side of ourselves and what we are here to do as human beings. And, Christopher, I know in your writings and in your studies and in your travels and in all of the humongous and incredible amount of research you've done, you know, of all of us, you know that the whole goal is to elevate the soul from human form into light, right?
You're right.
So when you tie it all in together, what should we all be doing and taking responsibility for? Look in the mirror. There's the extent of your responsibility. You take care of that, and everything around you will flow properly.
Sure.
If you don't, it won't. It's like if you don't do the dishes, they're not going to get done. You know, I don't have elves that come in and clean dishes for me and vacuum my house at night. Wish I did, but I don't.
Yeah.
You know, I got cats. But you know what I mean? I mean, this is the thing. When we put that battle out there in front of us, it looks like a tsunami coming at us.
Yeah.
When we put the battle inside ourselves and say, okay, I'm only responsible for this, and this is what I'm going to do. And if other people get the message, great, because they'll pass it on the same way I do. And then what's happening is the whole thing turns honest. You're not forcing anybody. You're not convincing anybody. You're just giving them the truth and letting it do its work.
Yeah.
Sure. And I probably wouldn't want everybody to wake up at the same time anyway.
Oh, my God. Can you,
you
imagine?
So I think it's probably good that it goes in waves. And you know, you only get to wake up a few people at a time because it's a whole emotional roller coaster that people have to go through. So,
yo, if we're all here to learn, then everybody's learning, and that would include the other side, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it has to.
Has to.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So when you get down to a reality base of what we're all facing, really what it still comes down to, what do you put into it? Because if you add your little bit of darkness into the mix gets darker. It's just like paint. If you got three buckets of paint, one with black, one with white, and you pour out of the white and you pour out of the dark, the more you pour of the dark, the grayer and darker the paint gets, correct?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what we do with our lives.
Well, I'll just add this in terms of what, you know, I've been sort of thinking about this and the other side that we sort of did, the other that's not us, the evil side. When George Bush, when the United States and Britain invaded Iraq, there was a slew of articles psychoanalyzing George Bush and the whole psychoanalyzing evil.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I ran across one particular article written by this woman. She said, you know, I've been a field counselor. I'm a psychologist, and I don't know if I told this story to you guys or not. In any case, said, you know, I read the article, and towards the end she says, you know, I have 25 years of being on the field and looking at this and helping people and counseling them. The root conclusion is that the root cause of every antisocial behavior is deep, unfathomed sadness.
Yes. Well, okay, let me answer that.
So when I thought to myself, okay, if this stands true, okay, we'll say she's right. And if this stands true for one single person, can it stand for a group of people? And if we look at our society, which is the most antisocial aspect of our society? And that would be the so-called ruling elite. And I thought, so would that then mean that that collective of people have unfathomed sadness within their midst?
Exactly.
Oh, that's crazy. Why? These are rich people. What would they possibly
have to be sad
about?
Rich doesn't solve anything.
Pardon?
Rich doesn't solve anything.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, in my thinking, I thought, well, you know, what could these people possibly be sad about? Or you know, I imagine them to have happy lives. This is, you know, how could that be? And then you think a little bit, you know, deeper, and you really go into in that midst. Think about the fact that these people live in a collective in which they can get away with stuff. Like, say, a poor kid who, you know, whose uncle does something to them, you know, they can go down to the cop shop, and the uncle's taken in right away. But if you're, you know, part of the ruling elite, and your uncle does something to you, but he also happens to sit on the Supreme Court, you know, and then you go to the cop shop, and you're, you know, that's your dad who runs, you know, the top Supreme cop, I mean, where are you going to get justice?
You aren't,
so,
and because of that...
So in that collective, they do to themselves what they do to us.
Yes,
and yet they have no recourse for justice because of the
word normalize.
Impunity.
You think the word normalize. We hear stories about Bohemian Grove and how they have pedophilic orgies and things down there, all kinds of nasty behaviors. And we hear of all these nasty behaviors coming from government. I mean, you look at Kevin Annett's work with ITCCS and the missing Aboriginal children in Canada, and the fact that when Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth came to visit the Kamloops school, 10 children went on a picnic with them and never returned. Okay, all these different things. It gets normalized in that sense because there is no way out. The only thing you can do is accept. And once you accept, it becomes normalized. But where I wanted to interrupt before was to back you up 100% with a quote from Mother Teresa. Mother Teresa, who was quoted ad infinitum by Princess Diana, said this, and this is the exact core And these words actually explain to you what they could be sad about. Okay? And here it is. Mother Teresa said, "The main problem with the world is too many people feeling unloved."
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There it is,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
It goes to the heart chakra, right, Christopher?
Yeah. Absolutely.
So in effect, we may be dealing with extraordinarily a collective of people who are extremely sad and have no idea that they're sad.
You know what? If you watch Oprah, you'll learn that nobody does anything nasty unless they hurt first. What does that tell you? How much do you have to hurt to go psychopathic? And I have a friend who's a poet. His name is Nick Beat in Toronto. He's a beat poet. He's awesome. And he wrote a song, and he sings too. He wrote this song, and the lead line in it is, "Given enough pain, we will all go insane. Given enough pain." And that's exactly what it is. One way or another, we feel pain. And the pain of feeling unloved can come in rich families and in poor families equally. Any child who feels neglected, who feels unimportant, who feels that unless they do this or that, they aren't important, okay? Any child who is allowed to grow up in that environment, or worse, is going to feel unloved. And consequently, when you have no love being given to you, you don't know how to value yourself or love yourself. And if you don't love yourself, you can't love anyone else. And then you look at our divorce rate, which is over 50%, and go, what a surprise. What a surprise. You see, this is where it's all coming from. And you're absolutely right, and I love you for bringing this up. I absolutely love you for bringing this up, Asana, because this is a fabulous topic.
I guess our you know, a task is to one of the goals would be to actually to make the ruling elite get in touch with themselves.
Yeah,
you
wouldn't
know,
that be nice?
Like, to admit the dark skeletons, bring them out, because, you know, it's going to destroy us and them, and I mean, you know, the humanity will survive, the world will survive,
well,
you know,
here's
or
what I think.
At least be destroyed and revive again. However,
you know what? I totally agree with you, and what I would say is something like along these lines to back up what you're saying, and that is, can you imagine if when we were talking about child sexual abuse, we gave the impression that we care even about the elite's children. Now, if the elite's children hear that, all of a sudden they got a way out they didn't have before. And then you get the idea of, gee, maybe that's why they put it in the Bible to love your enemy. You see, because you're dealing with energy, love being positive and hatred or enmity being negative, okay? Peace is at neutral. It isn't one side or the other. If you're at one side or the other, see, it's a total acceptance in love of everything.
Yeah.
And
there's a young filmmaker. He's the heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune.
Uh-huh.
And he's done two movies so far. One movie was a couple of years back. It was called Born Rich, and he just turned the camera on with his buddies and had them talk. And so it was an insight into people who were born into rich families. And he's done the latest, another one. I can't remember what the name of the last one is. He just put it out.
It's dry.
And these are really insightful. These are, you know, these are the first steps of people, you know, in the so-called, you know, higher echelons of society who are taking, you know, steps to turn the camera in on themselves. He's doing something that's never been done before, which is expose the ruling elite. It's, you know,
uh-huh.
And I wouldn't say the ruling elite like the Rothschilds or anything like that. The, you know, the nouveau riche, maybe. You know, the money that's coming in from the last 300 years of boom in America. But still, that's a start. And I just thought, you know, that when I saw that, I was really impressed. I thought, you know, it's catching on, this sort of, you know, self-analysis I think anybody should check it out. Just go on YouTube and Johnson & Johnson Air, Born Rich, and you'll see the movies. And they're definitely not movies. They're just, pardon?
It's called Thrive. His new movie.
No, that's not the guy. No, but yes, I know. I heard that one.
Procter Gamble.
Procter Gamble. That's not. That's not. This is different. This is him just turning on the camera. It's like a reality show with him in it. And he interviews a lot of people his own age who are, you know, heirs of, you know, different fortunes. And how they're like, you'll see some of the strangest things you would have never thought, you know, like a grandchild of Warren Buffett who babysits, who goes out and cleans people's houses. You know, and her grandfather was just like livid and won't talk to her. And she's like, well, I like doing this. It's really weird that I'm, you know, happen to be there, you know, the grandchild of Warren Buffett, the richest man. But she meditates and it was just, you know, just some unusual characters. And you go, my goodness, you know, all sorts of shades of gray up there.
It's all black and white. And we also have to be very careful. Speaking of, Christopher was talking false flag at the front end of this show, and what does it advise us in the religious texts? Beware of false prophets, for there will be many. Okay, so we have to watch for that. Some of these people coming out as, you know, the new heroes for that are they're defecting from the elite, so to speak. Some of them are only controlled opposition. So
yeah, I agree, but this guy was not so much of a leader. You'll see the anguish.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just bringing up the point that people need to be careful because this is yet another tactic that people can pull on us, and that is to make themselves look like heroes when they really aren't. You know, and it's not quite as blatant as Bill Gates and his vaccine scam. Right? But, I'm a great philanthropist. I'm saving children as he goes around seeding epidemics all over Africa. Good for you, Billy boy. Good for you.
Yeah.
You know,
love to see these people brought to justice for everything.
Oh, they will be.
Maybe not on this earth, because I think we're in a Armageddon-type phenomena here, and where I think there could be a third world war, and there could be massive starvation and murder of Americans and Canadians and people around the world. So, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been saying for a number of years now that Mother Earth is like a big dog with fleas right now. One day she's going to scratch.
Yeah,
you know, so Armageddon, whether caused by man or caused universally, I'm fully expecting something, you know, totally cataclysmic. I fully expect that. And because I look at it, I'm going, that's the only thing that's going to wake these people up. It's like when you're faced with hysteria, what do? You slap the person across the face. Why? To bring them into present time.
Yeah.
They're in fear and panic, which is not in present time. Fear is always of the future. Pain and anguish is of the past. Okay? And if you're in fear, you're living ahead of yourself. So you slap the person, and they go, oh, I'm here. Right?
Yeah.
Goes with the Scientology technique. That, remember the one that was in the movie even? It was funny that people were laughing about it. Feel my finger? Yes. Right? And the funny part of it is, when you bring people into present time, that fear goes away. So here we are. We got about a third of the population on meds.
Yeah.
Yes, so consider what kind of fear and what kind of emotions would be floating around. Alcine is going to love this. A third of the population going into psych med withdrawals all at once.
Well, it might be better for them. I believe.
Well, I believe it too. But you know what? The withdrawals aren't.
No. These people would work through it in a period of days.
Yeah.
I think it would be better if people were denied their meds. I really do.
Yeah, and point them at the White House and give them weapons. Say, here, you got 3 days before it clears your system. Have fun, kiddies.
I guess so. I guess, you know, part of maybe there's an intention there to put the fear of God in people, because then that stops them from thinking positive thoughts, which I believe.
Oh, you think?
Your
you
thoughts
think?
Do have
yeah.
effect. So rather than sitting there hating them, why not just have really positive thoughts and imagine, I mean, why not create the ruling elite that we wish? You know, why not take the bull by the horns? Why not, you know, think about how we want to influence them and
well,
our thoughts and our words and our actions? And, you know, if you give the power back to the people.
Well, in other words, demonstrate cheerfully. Now, you know what? I have to, like, those demonstrations are always far more positive and they have far better outcome than those that make demands and yell and bitch and complain, and that's what they do. And, of course, the reason why they have so much so much result is because people don't look crazy when they're happy.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean? So they don't.
I'm going to the Monsanto's parade here in Ottawa and seeing that there was that good humor among the crowd, even though we were facing such a monster as Monsanto's. But you could just see it among the crowd, that kind of celebration of life and such.
Oh, yeah, this is the thing. Now, that brings me to another point. Oh, you're going to love this one. Canadian Parliament just passed a law last week, and it now makes it illegal for anyone to wear a mask to a demonstration. And it says that anyone who does is subject to a prison term of up to 10 years.
I saw that. That's terrible.
Well, what happened at Montebello? There was a bunch of cops that had those bandanas on their face, so they're not going
to
show up anymore.
If they go to jail, and why do we need a 10-year penalty and a separate law when we already had a law that had to do with disguise with intent? I mean, just because a person wears a V-mask doesn't mean he's going out to blow up a bank.
But
you know,
the whole problem is the people, the real terrorists in our society, are in the government and corporate.
Exactly. Well, you know what my solution is to that?
Protesting.
Yeah, but you know what my solution is to that law? Everybody wears a mask. Everybody.
Well,
come on, take us all.
Yeah, but the cops show up, they wear mask helmets too. I mean, that could
they
be a mask too.
They do.
Right. Arrest yourselves, you sons of guns.
Yeah.
Arrest yourselves. You can't. But mind you, they'll turn around and say, but we're not there to demonstrate. Well, yes, you are. You're there to demonstrate force.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
You damn well are there to demonstrate. Don't kid us. Every demonstration has a counter demonstration. And sometimes it happens to be other people with a dissenting view. And sometimes it happens to be law enforcement who are demonstrating that they're bigger guns than you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what they're there to do. And when they show up to marshal a parade, that's exactly what they're there to do. They're there to make you think, oh, the big guns are here. Well, it's nice to feel protected, but as we saw at the G20 in 2010, no such thing.
Yeah.
No such thing. They're not protecting anybody.
What gets me is how rampant the criminality is. Like here in Canada, we have the RCMP and CSIS, and yet these people are the most criminal.
Of course.
The higher people are, the more criminal they are. And they're going along with this whole thing.
Oh, yeah, let's make a little point here about things that are going on. Like in the first place, Montreal has a new mayor. Why does Montreal have a new mayor? Well, because the last mayor just got put in jail for corruption.
Yeah, did he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how's your crack-smoking pot out there in Toronto?
Oh, well, you know, Mr. Ford is another story. I mean, it turns out that this whole thing has been under investigation for a year now.
Mm.
Okay? For a year, they've been investigating this so-called gang. And it turns out, like, Ford laughed off the photo that was shown on the Jon Stewart show. It was on the front page of the Star and on the front page of just about everywhere. And if you did a Google search on that incident, it was like everywhere in the world knew about Rob Ford.
Yeah.
Everywhere in the world. And there, he's trying to dismiss it as, it's nothing, it isn't true, I didn't do it, yada, yada.
Yeah.
Well, turns out they've been investigating for a year. Turns out that Ford had more than a passing acquaintance. You know, yes, mayors do go around and glad hand people and put their arms around people and have pictures taken with them. Yes, they do. But that's what he tried to pass it off as. But it turns out they know he's got a more than a passing association with these guys who are known gangbangers. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then you got all these people coming forward in the Globe and Mail, which does its research reasonably well, and said very clearly about three or four times on the page of the whole section they dedicated to this, they consulted with their lawyers all the way. Turns out Doug Ford, who is really the power behind the throne in Toronto, he's the mayor's brother, and he's the smart one of the two, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out Dougie Boy has a history as a hash dealer. Oh, but I never dealt hash. Well, you know what? I personally know people who knew he was dealing. I personally know people who witnessed him. Okay?
Haven't people been arrested on lesser accusations than this?
Oh,
like,
you think?
Been, you know?
Yeah, it depends
like,
on
they
what...
shouldn't have been at least on probation. Like, even if somebody just said something, you can get arrested.
Exactly.
In Canada.
Well, what I want to know is why is our prime minister still in office when he's in contempt of parliament?
Yes.
And why is he still prime minister when a federal court has deemed the last election to be invalid?
Really?
Because of the fluoride in the water.
Yeah, how is this?
Everybody's busy texting. I don't know.
Well, they must be. You know, and their iPad must be up their nether end, too, because I tell you, for you not to notice that your government is in contempt of Parliament, okay, for them not to notice that these guys are ripping off the taxpayer left, right, center, sideways, and upside down, and I should add inside out because that's where your pockets go. You know, when you look at this and you see, you know, contempt of Parliament and holy crap, the election wasn't even real. And why are we tolerating this?
But there's nowhere to turn. That's the problem. Who do we turn to? You can't go to the police. You can't go to CSIS. All the top people are owned by these international corporate elite.
Yeah, but you know what? You start by cutting away at the root. Okay, the root of it is where you kill a plant, right? And we've allowed the roots to grow. So you cut away at the root. You vote with your dollars. You buy, you know, food that's healthy for you in as much as you possibly can. And if you can't buy organic produce, then get conventional and get the stuff you can wash the pesticides off. Make sure you know which ones are healthier than others and why, right? Get smart. Just get smart. And vote with your dollar. That's one way. The other way is what Hackensack, New Jersey did and Bell, California did. Okay, these are two cities in the United States. Hackensack just did this in the last little while. They kicked out their entire city council.
I saw that, yeah. That was quite something.
They kicked them all out.
Wait,
and you know what? They ran for office.
We don't have the citizenry to do that. We don't have the people who are upset enough, insulted enough by what's going on.
Well,
you know, and the system keeps going anyway. So, I mean, maybe Harper is irrelevant. Maybe the mayor is irrelevant. The fact is that
Hence the conflict between good and evil inside ourselves is being won by what? You see? This is where we're pinpointing the problem because we're overwhelmed and we'd rather deal with the devil we know than the devil we don't know. So we keep dealing with devils.
Well, I think the problem here is not the evil. It's the fact that there's nobody to counter the evil. The apathy is probably a bigger problem, as I see it. That's a bigger problem than the evil.
It is, absolutely, because most people, given a free choice, are going to choose what's right. Most people, unless they're in abject pain, they're capable of choosing, especially in the collective where they feel peer pressure. And bear in mind, this collectivism that they're foisting on us now is exactly to exert peer pressure to govern our behavior.
We're dealing with a bunch of adult children, as I see it. A lot of people who have decided that they, you know, they don't have a responsibility to uphold. It's not up to them to hold the government together. They're not, you know, their culture is handed to them.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be that mothers and fathers and aunts and uncles and the locals of the town used to pass the culture. We don't have that anymore. Our culture is passed down to us through the TV and through the, you know, public education means. So
and of course,
people,
what
a
they
lot
do
of
in
stuff that.
That
people used to do for themselves, they don't do.
Have you been connected to my head somehow? Because I've been talking about that. The inconvenience of convenience is that, you know, the more we go for our stuff, every time something neat comes out, okay, it's a convenience. So we don't have to do this or that anymore. And by not having to do this or that anymore, we lose touch with how to do this or that.
Yeah.
So we have kids growing up who don't know how to cook. They don't know how to sew. They couldn't construct a garment if you paid them. They couldn't fix a car. They couldn't build a house. They couldn't build a shelter.
Yeah.
Right? They don't know how to feed themselves. They have no clue what to do with babies. They have no clue what to do with relationships. They have no clue how to do anything. Therefore, they become totally dependent on what is supplied by said elite.
Yes, but it carries its own deceit of its own destruction, right? I mean, if you don't know how to do it, you don't know how to do it. And that way, if the, you know,
yeah, but I have an answer
defend,
for that.
There's plenty of people in this world, plenty of cultures that do know how to do those things.
Yeah, and you know what? And I have an answer for that, too. Simple answer is, you know what? It ain't rocket science. Learn. Because stupid people have been doing it for centuries without a problem. And if stupid people can do it, we can all do it.
Yeah.
It's not that hard.
It is, yeah.
It's not that complex. You know, the universe, God, creator, whoever you want to call it, whatever you want to call it, matters not to me. I have reverence for all of it. But the whole thing was laid out, and I know, Christopher, you'll bear this out too, extremely simply. The rules of how it all operates are extremely simple. It's the dogma that's not. Right? It's what we add in.
A dogma everywhere, in school, on TV. TV, people have to turn their TVs off. Like, the TV is such a destructive force over people.
Yeah.
And the newspapers.
Look at what the governments of Brazil and Turkey have to deal with. I mean, these are flashpoints of what this government or United States government has to deal with, too. I mean, you bring up a synergy that is not doing stuff for itself. You know, this is also, it can turn on you, you know? It's expecting those things now. So you end up having to shoot the very people you've supported.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. I just think it's funny in terms of, if you take away the self-sufficiency of the people, then you've got a blob that of mass of people that if they're irritable, they'll take to the streets and look what happens.
Yeah, but remember too, when you want to if you want to control a mass of people, what do you control?
Well, the food, weather.
Exactly, food, and what has been undergoing the worst assault in history in the last couple of decades is food.
Yeah, from the GM foods, everything.
The pesticides, the chemtrails, back to chemtrails, cutting out the light, and what's Monsanto developing at the same time as chemtrails are being dropped on us, low-light tolerant plants and aluminum-resistant plants. What's that tell you? The aluminum's coming from somewhere. I ain't pouring it in my garden, so where's it coming from?
We're going to have to hear some of Afsane's discussion of the paperwork done by Vancouver Skywatch around this.
Oh, please, the athletes. I'd love to hear that.
Okay, sure. One of our members started up a project where we collected rainwater and we sent it into an official lab. We asked which lab the government, the local government here, recommends for us to send our samples to. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is we had five samples from around Vancouver, and we poured them into, combined them all. So that became one sample. And we had some extra over from east side of Vancouver, so that was from one location. So we put in two samples, one which is the combination from all around Vancouver, and one was just from one location in Vancouver. Now, I'll just, we got tested for a bunch of things, but I'll just concentrate on the aluminum. The guidelines are to have 0.1 milligrams per liter. Our test came back, and the combined one has a 0.2 sampling of milligrams per liter of aluminum present in the sample.
So that's an average.
Which is twice the amount of that is allowable. The sample that just came from one location was 0.55. So that's five times over the recommended level that should be. In fact, there really shouldn't be any aluminum present, but in any case, they've got a figure here that says 0.1 milligrams per liter. And our samples came back with one which was twice the amount of aluminum recommended and one which five times the allowed
aluminum. Now, Alcine, I'm not any math genius, okay, but when you say you had these samples combined, and that combined sample came back at 0.2, okay, which is double, okay, that would mean
which
that the
double.
Aggregate, the that figure would be an average, wouldn't it?
So yes, you could that have would had be an average there, of.
Yeah, so you could have had in there a couple of samples that registered nothing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but, you know, just so it was a good thing that we actually had two samples because we were just going to go with one.
Yeah,
right.
Well, see,
which
what
was
would
a combination
be,
of everything.
Well,
so
what
the fact
would be
that
real
we also
interesting
a,
to me, what would be
of?
Real interesting now would be to go and individually hit those areas and find out, okay, where's the area that has none?
Yes.
Because something's decreasing those numbers.
Yeah, and also, it's just a one-time test that costs us quite a bit of money, so we have to figure out how we can do in-home testing and do it for a long period of time because we can't really take this sample as any indication, like we can't take it anywhere. We have to actually have, a pattern has to develop out of this. So we're, trying to get a bunch of people that, located one test that's cheap
enough
for us to
be able
to do.
Maybe we should put out a call for people who have that kind of technology or ability to come forward and say, okay, I'll help you, because there's got to be people out there who have the tech for whatever reason. Well, here's a good reason to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. We've located one particular test that will be, and they're not official, but it's not like a lab test like this one is. But in any case, we can do it for an extended period of time and do it in several locations around town and then try to see if we can see a pattern after 3 months. And I think that with that one, we're going to take to the papers. We're going to take to the mainstream media.
Maybe you should talk to Ed Griffin, the guy who did the film What in the World Are They Spraying and Why in the World Are They Spraying? Maybe you should talk to him about perhaps working with his site to fund such a study.
Yeah, it's going to be affordable the way that after we take it to the media. I would hopefully we can do it ourselves and then take it to the media, and then they can do the big bucks in terms of the lab tests and so on and so forth, lab quality tests.
Do you really think the mainstream media would cover this? I don't believe they would.
They don't have to anymore.
We're not talking about mainstream. We're talking about individuals in the mainstream. Okay? As long as you can take something and look, you should be alarmed because you're going out in the rain. So you want to do something neat with your career choice. here's something to pursue.
Yeah, I want to add something here too, because I think it's a dimension of this, what we're saying, that's kind of important. As you said earlier, like, you know, and we were discussing how difficult it is to get people to, you know, wake up, actually open their eyes and keep them open. It's one thing to open them for 2 seconds and then go, oh, well, I haven't got time for that, shut them again. Okay? It's another to stay awake. And essentially, what I'm thinking of is that we have to hit a commonality where, and this is how I find the easiest way to break a paradigm, is to confront people with something they can't argue with. And this flies in the face of the Hegelian dialectic and Delphi technique, where they reduce the argument. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, I'm sure you've heard of it, Christopher, I'm pretty sure you've heard of it too, the precautionary principle. Okay, now the precautionary principle has been used by such people as Cindy Verschuer from BC Hydro, you know, in the fight against smart meters and all this kind of stuff. All kinds of parliamentarians and all kinds of governments refer to the precautionary principle. Well, what's the precautionary principle? It is now viewed as an international standard. And the precautionary principle states that if there is a possibility of harm, there should not be any promotion of whatever it is until the risks are known, assessed, and safety determined, and if you can use it safely within conditions, or whether you can use it safely completely, or whether you can't use it safely at all. This is what the precautionary principle is. This is what they're using against us in health freedom. They're trying to say that supplements and natural elements are dangerous, okay? So they're applying what they call the precautionary principle, and they're making natural health product producers jump through hoops and pay millions to get their products to market. Well, what if we turn that around and say, hello, what about the precautionary principle here? Mm. You see, this is something both sides agree on.
Well, they don't apply the precautionary experience anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, but since they've used it,
with aluminum and barium and
stuff. Oh, we know that. But you see, since they promote it so much, they're hung by it.
Yeah,
it's called being hoist. It's called being hoist on your own petard.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So, I just told a bunch of people that, you know, they might want to consider the precautionary principle and then adding all the other stuff standing behind it. Because look at the evidence. I mean, you look at the evidence of damage done by chemtrails. There's lots of it, especially when you look at Morgellons and all these different things that are happening because of it. You know, I mean, it's scary when you add it all up, but if you stick it under the rubric of something they already have to accept because they made it their own damn international standard, then you can run it up their left nostril and give it a twist.
Yeah, but it does no good in my view. But
well, I mean, if it's all you can do, again, I go back to, okay, let's try this. This sounds neat, right? But
yeah.
You don't worry about the result. You just do it because it's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a big, a fiberglass insulation. It took a long time to finally where they had to stop it, and now it's been banned. That didn't happen overnight.
No, it didn't.
Dead bodies had to show up.
Yeah, lots
of
them.
Unfortunately.
And you know what's funny?
What's
funny is that they are still advertising on U.S. television stations. You know how lawyers advertise down there. Okay, and they're saying, are you suffering from mesothelioma, or did someone you love die of it? Did it have to do with asbestos and blah, blah, blah? And, of course, they're asking people to sue now. So how long did it take? It's not over yet.
Yeah.
It's not over. And none of these things are all going to trickle away. I mean, this is the way it has to be. We're all at different stages of awareness and development.
Sure. I mean, when the next big red, when all of a sudden these politicians start losing their minds and start forgetting their own names and what party affiliations by the time they're 55.
Well, we have a few of those.
Pardon?
Yeah.
We have a few of those.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they're going to have to kind of go, what's going on here? What's happening? So it's unfortunate that people don't wake up beforehand, but it looks like that's what's will happen. I mean,
well,
if we're right, I mean, if we're raising an alarm and what we are saying is true, then, it's to be expected that there's going to be some sort of mortality rate, increase in mortality rate.
And perhaps
and
some of them.
At that point, people will start investigating.
Yeah, and perhaps some of them,
Sure, some of them.
The pilots, sure. Also, of all the people who have to handle those chemicals, the leaks will come out. I don't know how long. I remember we went to the Monsanto rally, and I was, carrying my chemtrail signs, and an older gentleman came up to me and said, "Oh, we were protesting chemtrails back in the 60s. I said, "Get out of here." He goes, "Yep." And I said, "What do you mean? You were out on the street with banners?" And he goes, "Yeah, we were." And I said, "Well, what did you call them? What did you refer to them?" And he said, "Chemtrails. We called them chemtrails." So,
kidding.
I said, "Do you have any pictures?" He said, "No, I don't." So that's amazing to me.
It's time for a Google on that one, I think. Because I never saw any stripes in the sky. I'm an old lady. I didn't see any stripes in the sky back in the 60s. Sky looked like it looked back then. It had depth and beauty and elegance about it, and now it's pastel blue whippy thing.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. In 2008, I saw in 2010, they were doing, say, Monday to Friday, and Saturday and Sunday they didn't spray. And then it flipped over, and all of a sudden they were spraying 7 days a week. So they've gradually, incrementally introduced it. So maybe they were spraying once a year, twice a year. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying, habitualize people. I mean, you go outside right now, and the sky can be completely white. The sun is shining still through it, and people don't notice.
I know.
I'm just amazed. Little kids, if you show them a picture with a white sky, they'll just be like, "Well, that's the white sky. That's what it looks like. This is what I see all the time." They wouldn't know the difference.
No. I mean, I was in awe over that thought last year. It struck me. It's kind of an odd thought to think when you think about it. But I look up at the sky and I go, I'm realizing that my kids will never see the sky the way I saw it. My grandchildren will never see the sky the way I saw it. Though my children may remember what it looked like, but it's disappeared during their lifetime. And now my grandchildren don't know what the sky really looks like. Why? Because some idiots decided they want to rule the world.
Well, they're not going to succeed, that's
for
sure.
No, they're not.
It
is an arrogant person indeed who thinks that they can beat God. I'm one of those people who does not personify God sitting on a throne somewhere. I know some people do, and that's cool. They can do what they want. Me, I see it all as a massive, massive field of very articulated and very intelligent energy. And it runs itself. And when you run afoul of it, your life collapses. And when you don't run afoul of it, your life goes along very merrily. But look how far afoul of it we all are. So there's your battle. You want paradise? Follow the law of karma. Do no harm. Isn't that what Gandhi taught? Do no harm.
I think that eventually your grandchildren will eventually see what the sky, ought to look like. This stuff will stop.
I hope.
I know it has to stop. I mean, I'm not going to stop talking about it. I've lost friends over it, but I've gained massive new friends because of it. And people that I really like because they care.
And that's that's another thing out of the overwhelming part. That maybe you should, it's good that you brought that up, that you've lost friends. So have I. And I don't know, I've had people tell me, don't email me any of this stuff anymore, but they're willing to carry on a friendship on another level. I've had other people say, you're a nut bar, I don't want to talk to you anymore. Right? So it covers a range, but I think all of us who are active are aware that there are certain people we just can't hang with anymore because they're too ignorant. We can't even tolerate their ignorance anymore, and they can't tolerate us. And we can't help but open our mouths and say, hey, there's something wrong. Don't you know that? Blah, blah, blah. And of course, what happens is you get people tuning each other out, and then you get people arguing. You lose your friends, and you get overwhelmed. You burn out, and you stop being active, and you just sit down again and go, oh, well. You know?
Yeah. Well, like I said, though, I have gained some really good friends.
Me too.
And I'm glad for that. And they're the type of people that I like, that I care
about.
You know
what?
They care.
I think they're superior friends.
I think so.
Yeah.
They're definitely flawed people, but nonetheless, the qualities that I appreciate are there.
Exactly. Exactly. Nobody's perfect. I can accept flaws, but stupidity is hard to fix. Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah.
But you can't fix stupid, so there you go. You do what you can. You do what you can. Yeah. Don't take responsibility for the big picture because you didn't draw it.
Yeah.
We all did. So, you know, if we back off on our behavior and put it all on an even keel, and, you know, you can't battle this thing to the ground. You can't just fight it. It's truth against lie is what's really going on. It's truth against lie. So all you can do is you throw the truth out there, it'll do the battle for us. You know, you don't have to fight for it because it is what it is. Just put it out there. Once it gets out there, how are you going to overcome it? The sky is green. Oh, really? Get your spray can. Call me when you're done. That's how powerful the truth is.
Well, they just have their media and their education, and they undermine the truth, and people believe what they're taught on the TV and in school. So
yeah, well, that's what we're really up against, isn't
it? That's what we're up against, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's manipulation, mind control, propaganda, the whole nine.
Yeah.
Well, in the time that I've been doing this, more and more people are awake. I remember being on the street where we did 9/11 tabling, right?
Uh-huh.
And there was a time when people would not approach us. Now we set up and we've got conversations for the whole day. Lots of people come around.
In fact,
we were mentioned in the local paper. They said, oh, well, you know, if you take a walk down Granville Street, you'll see you can have a nice, interesting chat with the 9/11 truthers.
Uh-huh.
So,
really?
Well, you know, speaking of these truthful little ditties, you know, 9/11 being one big ditty, but the birthers. This is really funny.
Obama.
Yeah. Apparently, in his book, he's talking about his father and how he was really proud how his father served in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Only thing is, in 1939, his father was 3 years old.
Yeah. That's always,
How is that possible? And the other thing is, how does his birth certificate say Kenya? Okay.
Yeah.
When Kenya didn't exist when he was born. Kenya, as a nation, did not exist until 1963. He was born in 61.
I'm not up on that entire issue, and I'm... I'm sure it's very relevant, but at the same time, he's installed president. I mean, you know, we just got to wait it out.
We're Canadians. We can't do anything about it. Them, they can impeach, and why the hell haven't they?
They say
they're going to impeach every president since George Ford, whatever.
Yeah.
Who's got the time? Who's got the energy? And, it's a laughable. It's laughable. You know, it's all laughable. Like, you know, Putin actually runs Russia. There's just no way that Obama runs the United States.
Oh, you're not referring to Pierre Poutine, the one who did the Canadian votes?
No, I'm talking about Russia. I'm talking about Vladimir Putin. I'm
Putin.
Just saying that, you know, there are people who are actually in, you know, not, I would say control, but I would say, I guess, you know, are in fact essential to the mechanism of the state. And Obama is not essential to the mechanism of the state. I mean,
no
you know, I it's a joke.
Oh, I know. And
so
guess
who
the joke's
Bush.
On?
Yeah.
That's the sad part. The joke's on us.
Yeah, look at who, the Harper. I mean, it's I, well.
Oh, Lord. Harperius. What a toad he is. What a toad. You know, and I'm apologizing to toads when I say it. Seriously. And, of course,
They're hiring for the job, and they do their job, and they get out of the way. And
yeah, well, interestingly enough, we had that fellow out in Alberta who essentially quit caucus in the last couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I forget his name already.
About that.
The PC guy?
Huh?
The PC guy in Harvard?
Yeah, yeah. He didn't switch sides. He went independent.
Oh, yeah.
So, which meant to me a lot more than somebody switching sides, because it just means somebody gave him a better deal. But what impresses me is when somebody leaves a party, stays true to their principles, and goes independent. That impresses me, because it means that he was there for a reason. But he came out and he said, I loved this line. I was so, so happy to hear him say it, and I hope everybody heard it. He said, it turned out that I was representing my government to the people instead of representing the people to the government.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And
a whole craft of them in Ottawa.
Precisely. So when he said that, I went, wait a minute, here's a guy who knows what his job is. He knows what his job is. He was hired to manage the day-to-day business of the Canadian people. That is his job as a manager. Now, if you are a business owner and your manager is stealing money, is lying, is obfuscating, is making secret agreements offshore, i.e. with other corporations that you don't know about, what do you do with him? You fire his butt, and you don't wait. You say, you're done, you're out. And you have him frog marched out of the building, and we'll send your stuff on to you, buddy. That's what you do. You don't wait for another election.
Yeah, in Canada, nothing happens.
Exactly. But if you wait for another election, what you're doing is saying, well, yeah, we've caught you being an out-and-out crook, but we'll tolerate you being an out-and-out crook until the next election rolls around. Now, how dumb is that? What if we handled bank robbers that way? You know, we don't like we don't like that you robbed the bank, but here's a free pass. You can rob a few more until we're ready to arrest you. What? I mean, come on, people. Can you not make an analogy anymore? Can you not see what's going on here? The man needs to be in jail for what he's done.
Yeah.
And half of Parliament with him. And the other half in a mental ward until they come to their senses.
Yeah.
You know, I have a senator who's an old, old, old friend of mine from back in my Winnipeg days, Senator Rod Zimmer. I called him Zimbo. That's what we used to call him. And Rod Zimmer is apparently he's fighting brain cancer and he's got all kinds of problems, but he is an old friend. And I said, hey, how about you become a whistleblower? What have you got to lose, Zimbo? What have you got to lose? And this is a question I would put to every Canadian member of parliament, member of provincial legislature / parliament / whatever they want to call it.
Yeah.
Okay, member of every city council. What have you got to lose by being honorable? What have you got to lose, and what do we have to gain?
I wonder when Astonay did the Vancouver chemtrail watch, if they had approached any BC politicians to come out to watch their videos.
Good question.
Yeah, we did. And we sent out to all sorts of law firms, and we did not hear back anything from them.
Yeah,
I'm in agreement with the makers of the movie, which is just go to the people. You know, once it's what we're doing is the best thing to do, which is just go out to the people and wake the people up. You know, trying to change these. They've got their hands tied. There's a lot of things they can't do, and so the pressure should be put on the people. Wake up the people, and then unmask the people. But they'll take care of itself. I mean, we should just take care of waking people up. And I don't know if waking is the best term to use. Notifying people. Maybe that's a better, you know, so we're not implying that they're asleep. Obviously, they're not
asleep.
They're taking care of their bills. They're going to work. They're, you know, taking care of their children. We're notifying them of things that they're not aware of.
I think waking is a good idea.
And the rest will take care of itself.
And just to add the bright side
of looking at this, especially for Americans, you know, we're learning a lot of stuff that citizens from other countries just don't, because they're not in a position, you know, to have such offensive governments coming at them. And we're learning a lot. You know, there's, you know, you get an American, you know, to go behind a project, it gets done. You know, to wake people up, they get it. They know how to do it because they've been doing it for so long now, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Some good lessons to teach people. I mean, that's the upside of having to deal with so much BS from the government, is you learn how to deal with this, what tricks to use, you know?
Yeah, well, we're starting to use some of their tricks on them. And interestingly enough, you know, their funny little techniques work just as well on them as they do on us. Mm. Funny thing about that, the nature of the human mind being what it is, they think theirs is superior. We know it's the same. So, you know, what works on us is going to work on them.
40 million Americans bank outside of the major banking institutes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, when it collapses, what's going to collapse? What portion of it? What we say of a total collapse, because lots of people are outside the system already.
Yeah, well,
the population of entire country.
Yeah,
you know, 40 million is the population of a reasonable sized country around in the world.
Yeah, well, I worry more about currencies collapsing than I do about national economies.
I think the bankers have to worry about the currency collapsing, not me. You know, you got education, you got some skill, you got something to barter, we're fine. As soon as people learn, hey, we don't need this. We can talk to each other.
That's right.
That's the stuff that they should be worried about, the alliances that will form.
Well,
people are just going to go around like, I don't have a quarter. I don't have a dollar bill. They'll find a way to get
the food. The question they need to ask themselves is, what did people do before there was this or that? I mean, in the last 50 years... Okay, you have to recognize that in the last 50 years, stuff has been invented and become universally available that was not even in my younger years even conceivable. That wasn't even conceivable. When I was growing up, there was one TV channel, then there were two TV channels, and we thought, wasn't that marvelous? TV started at 4 in the afternoon and shut off at like midnight. Ran for 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we didn't have a choice of anything. We didn't have call waiting on our phone. If it was busy, it was busy. Mm-hmm. We didn't have computers. We didn't have any communication like that. And, of course, we don't do face-to-face anymore because we don't have to. But we could learn because people before us did it.
We do face-to-face, but we also do, you know, I'm conversing with people around the world, so I don't know if I've lost anything. I think I've gained stuff.
Well, there's
still
stuff
have the
that you gain. There's stuff that you gain, but then when you put certain relationship types into that scenario, you have family collapse, you have all kinds of things collapsing. On the emotional side of things, people are not doing well. They are not coping well. So, yeah, we have communications that we didn't have. And yeah, it is a convenience. However, on a personal level, on that level where our heart is involved and not just the transmission of data, we are in deep trouble because we've depersonalized. You know, I mean, look around you. You see kids, they're attached to all their friends, but their friends live on the other side of the world.
Yeah, well,
it makes it difficult. Your person to person, the vibratory level, all of that is being translated wrongly, and in the midst of that, we're also poisoning ourselves with the Wi-Fi. But hey, that's okay, because I can communicate by Skype. Whoopie ding, okay. You know, it used to be we had to wait, we had to write letters, and we had to wait, so we chose our words carefully. And we made all kinds of things work, but we don't put that kind of effort into things anymore, and we ought to. You know, we ought to. We ought to be preserving ourselves. But on the bright side of that is I remember, too, when the power went off. Remember the great blackout that hit the east side of the continent a few years back?
Yes, I was there. Well,
were you
actually,
here
I was
there
for the 2004.
Yeah, something like that. At any rate, the thing that I noticed the first thing that really struck me was the silence. But the second thing that struck me was how all my neighbors emerged from their houses at once and started talking.
Mm-hmm.
All of them at once. And over the next couple of days, while our power, we were very lucky on my street, our power was only off for 24 hours or 30 hours. Other people didn't have it for a week. But I have to say that during that time that we had nothing, people were barbecuing with other people. They were, oh, you've got a generator? Great. Here, we've got room in our freezer. Here, have some filtered water. Here, have some food. Have some this, have some that. You need this. Here, I've got everybody shared. Everybody worked together. Everybody was wonderful. The best of us came out. And I want to see more of the best of us come out, because that's what I grew up with, was the best of us. Christopher, you grew up with that, too. You know how people used to be.
Long time ago, it seems.
Yeah. It feels like it's older than dirt. I don't know how old. I mean, Afsene sounds so young.
No, I'm up there.
Are you? Okay. Well, you sound young, which is good. But, you know, I'm thinking back and I'm going, oh, my Lord, you know, what a path we've come to.
Yeah, well, people, we always think that the path was, that's part of life, you know. But there's such good stuff that's come out of it and, you know, our technology may be getting the best of us.
There were definitely certain things in the past that were ridiculous and ugly. But I have to say that I miss the days when neighbors were real neighbors. And, you know, you got to know everybody in close proximity to you. And you didn't cut yourself off from the world. And you didn't live your life in a chair by a computer screen. And, you know, everything was more real, more touchable, more tangible, more in contact. And now everything has become more virtual and cyber-related.
Well, it's there. The real world is still there. It hasn't gone away.
Exactly.
It hasn't gone away.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, I'm not saying there's no hope for us. I'm just saying, wow, isn't it fascinating how quickly we've gravitated and how easily we've gravitated from one to another? Because it was easy. We kind of went like we were on a grease slope, didn't we?
The computers are useful. That's why we gravitated. If it was a useless piece of invention, no, we wouldn't have gone near it.
Yeah, it's always a convenience, isn't it?
Sure, but it's more than just convenient. It's useful. You know, I get to talk to you. I get to, you know, write letters, send pictures, do work, you know, all sorts of things. It's quite
okay,
useful.
Okay, but now let me tell you something I read this week, and let me get your take on this. Now, Google has purchased a quantum computer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're talking mega huge, space bandwidth like, you know, from here to infinity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, power, and they're developing artificial intelligence. And as a friend of mine who has a great deal of experience in black ops tells me, she says, if you think that you've seen some of the amazing technology that's out there and that we suspect the government has, she says, forget it. They're 50 years ahead of what you ever thought of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they don't give it to us. Do
they? You know, where was the hovercraft? Where's the hover cars?
Well, I can remember cartoons back in the 60s. Remember Marvin the Martian?
Okay,
you are young. Okay, you were lying to me. You're a young kid. You're like 12.
No, come on now. The Jetsons?
The Jetsons and Flintstones and all that kind of stuff. But some things that they had portrayed in those old cartoon shows, they were unthinkable back then. They were fantasy back then. They're not fantasy now.
No.
We got drones the size of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they
the
look like mosquitoes.
Easy to kill, too. So there goes $20,000.
Yeah, exactly. Real quick. It's enough to make you go for about an hour and a half.
Did you see the minister from Ireland, I think, who spoke out against Obama and called him a war criminal?
The whistleblowers are coming out now, too.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that we have to do as a society is we have to start stepping up and protecting our ding-blasted whistleblowers, because if we don't have whistleblowers, we don't got the truth. And we have to have that truth. So whistleblowers from every level. You know, we're talking religious whistleblowers. We're talking medical whistleblowers. We're talking government whistleblowers, corporate whistleblowers. We need all of them to remember who they are.
Yeah,
and then we need to step up and make sure they don't get killed for coming out and doing what we want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's no point whistleblowing unless you're prepared to die these days.
The state in the United States is so fearful, and I think a lot of people are just shying away from the whole ordeal of what's happening because of their fearfulness of it.
Possible. And they're also using this technology to notify each other. So, whistleblowers have now access to instantaneous notoriety, so the way they're protected because they can make themselves known instantly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes their job of trying to get the information out a lot easier rather than publishing a book and, you know, this, that, and the other. You know, you go and get a blog and you notify a couple of alternative media outlets and your word is out.
Yeah,
that's some protection, but not really.
Yeah, well, what's really interesting is that now, and I, bear in mind, some of this stuff comes from controlled opposition, so it's hard to tell. But what I heard, the last week has been a hodgepodge. Okay, in the last week, I saw a list of what is presumably on the government's red list, a list of professions. And you know what's at the top of the list?
Probably journalists.
Journalists.
Yeah. Well, it's the act of desperation. I mean, they're, you know. But journalism have always been out there. The intelligentsia has always been, you know, numero public, or not public enemy, but government enemy number one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, the bottom line is they're, on the one hand, I don't know how dangerous it really is. You know, I really don't. We've had some people killed, but and some under very mysterious circumstances. Like, for instance, this Michael Hastings affair. I asked a fellow that I know who has been dealing in Mercedes for a long time, And he said to me, you would have to have some kind of a fire source go from the back end of the car, like happen in the back end of the car, for the car to have ignited at the back. So, you know, we see that there's, all whether it's a false flag or not, right, a Mercedes burned up. Well,
sure,
how
it's
did
a big
it
mission.
Burn up?
Just put it this way. If they wanted them dead, they could have had it lots of other quiet ways.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, to all of a sudden do something like this and have people make arguments like, well, look, BMWs don't do that, or Mercedes-Benz don't do that.
And if you think they're common or not common, think of this. You can go back to the case out of Caledonia a number of years ago where Dudley George, the native protester, was killed. Okay, and there was a great big stink about how much the premier was involved. That was Mike Harris at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And how much the premier was involved in ordering the RCMP into the area where it turned bloody and violent real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and there's all kinds of information to suggest that Dudley George was shot in the back. And he was certainly unarmed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, interestingly enough, the two officers involved in that both died in single car accidents within weeks of the hearings that they were to testify at. What are the odds?
Yeah, yeah.
What are the odds?
I know.
So, on the one hand, you know, you wonder, what are your odds of staying alive if you open your mouth? Well, this is why I'm saying there's safety in the public. But the public has to take care of these people. The public has to take care of them. If what they're whistleblowing is something that is that dangerous to the elite and to whatever they're doing, if it's that dangerous, then before they whistleblow, they should already have an avenue of safety before they open their mouths. And then they should open their mouths vicariously and virtually.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take mm-hmm. credit for it, but, you know, be in a safe place, like somebody's embassy or something. You know, they're trying to arrange, apparently, some kind of sanctuary for Edward Snowden, the guy who supposedly revealed all these NSA spying secrets. And I noticed, interestingly enough, that our friend John Rappaport, we have to get John back on the show because I really want to get his take on this stuff. But he was saying basically Edward Snowden couldn't have been anything but a plant. Because
it could be, I mean, just to normalize the situation, you know. Next year people are just, oh yeah, the government's been doing that. We know that, you know.
Yeah, well,
could
no,
be.
But you see, here's the thing. He couldn't have been, according to Rappaport, and I have to agree, this guy had top security clearance. Are you kidding? No way. And he took out so many files on a flash drive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of this stuff is monitored so carefully in these security agencies. I mean, if you are an agent, you are as much under scrutiny as the people you are scrutinizing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the bottom line is, how the hell did he do it? Well, he used to work for the CIA, so maybe the CIA, which could have hacked all of that, maybe they set him up.
Yeah.
And if they did, what's the CIA got in advantage? Well, like I've been saying for a long time, they got to crash the superpower, because you can't have a world government with a superpower at the table, can you? Okay, so they got to crash it. Well, how are they going to do that? You're not going to crash the American spirit unless you crash the American institutions. The American spirit is too big to get crashed because of money. It's too big to be crashed by somebody invading. It's too big. They set it up that way. But what it's not capable of handling is the heartache of finding out it's all a fraud. And so they're letting this stuff out. Look at what the NSA is doing, people. Look at what the president's doing, people. Look at what the IRS is doing. Look at what happened in Benghazi. Look at all these scandals. All of a sudden, they're floating to the top like cream.
Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. aren't they? All of a sudden. Why?
Well, I guess time will tell. What where they're really actually from and what their purpose is.
Yeah, but why is it all coming out at once? You see what I'm saying? This is a demoralizing, overall, it's demoralizing for the entire country.
Yeah, well, people have to have morals in order to be demoralized, and we sort of, and they have to actually care. So they're
we're also confronted again with an apathy.
I don't know if people care one way or another.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think that you have to have morals per se. I think you have to believe you do. And if there's one characteristic about the American people, it is my country, right or wrong. They don't care if, you know, American politics aren't popular. They're American, therefore they're the best. Okay?
Well, there's lots of people who question that mentality, who, you know, Americans who, you know, don't support
that.
They do
now.
You can't categorize them as that.
They do now. They didn't 50 years ago. They do now. And that's coming. And it's, you know, the more they see, the more they're exposed to, the more people are saying, hey, wow, this isn't right. Hey, wow, that isn't right. They're starting to add up the points. They're starting to add them up now.
Yeah. Obama goes around the world murdering people with drones, and it's terrible.
Oh, yeah. Well, they know. They know that. They're not happy about that.
Yeah.
But they know it. So, it, you know, it's starting to, a lot of the stuff is, it's coming out. It's literally, it's dribbling into the, like, it's like a sewage system that's backed up. And it just keeps coming and coming and coming. And I don't know how they're going to avoid all of this. You got it at every level. You got mayors being, nailed for corruption. You got politicians all over being nailed for this, that, the other thing, and everything else.
Yeah.
You've got a third of Parliament has criminal records, and it's about the same for the states, if not bigger.
It's like the Protocols of Zion, where they say you want to create so much distrust in the government.
Exactly.
Government at federal level, the provincial level, and that's what it's all about in a way.
Yes.
It's creating all this doubt about our government.
Yes, and then what does that do? Well, that creates a situation where the people might go to a state of uprising. Well, what would that create? Well, that would create a condition for martial law. And what would that create? That would be creating a condition for a provisional government set up by who? Likely the UN.
Yes, it seems the UN is behind a lot of this with their new UN peacekeeping forces. And so.
Oh, you think? And, oh, and I got to bring this up because, you know what, we're already past 5:30 here. Amazing what you can think of to talk about for an hour and a half, isn't it? But what I got to mention here, because this is really critical, is that the mechanisms by which trade agreements, which take our sovereignty and supersede all of our law and prevent us from getting any kind of feedback from or give any influence to our government, is a little clause in the World Trade Organization agreement that says that it is called TRIPS, Trade-Related Intellectual Property Law, okay? And you can look it up. It's how Bill Gates became a multi-billionaire to the point of being a demi-trillionaire. These things are declared exempt from Freedom of Information Act requests. Okay, and what these things are doing is they are tying together a network of nations at the international level, superseding all of our law, all of our constitutions, all of that stuff. And what people need to understand is even these mechanisms are being exposed. And what is really interesting is that you go into the law of contract, which is what all these things are, they're contracts. Well, there's no informed consent, is there? Are we informed? Does anybody say to you, I mean, have you ever seen a politician run for office and say, by the way, when I get in an office, I'm going to give away your sovereignty. You don't mind, do you?
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen one. You know, they wouldn't get elected if they did, but this is exactly what they're doing. They're signing on to these trade groups, and the ones that are public to at least Parliament are being agreed to by all Parliament.
Yeah.
And now, interestingly enough, this fellow who left in Alberta, to hark back to a few minutes ago, the fellow who left the Brent something, or I forget his name. I apologize for it. I should have boned up on that. But the thing is that this guy leaves, he's not the only guy who is complaining of being muzzled. He's not the only one. And we had Jeremy Arney on the last show. And one of the things that we were talking about was, you know, here Harper's losing his majority. And how many people would it take for him to lose his majority and thereby be subject to a vote of non-confidence and thereby be subject to being kicked out of office?
Yeah, about 12.
About 12, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of them, we got one down, 11 to go.
But
and what I heard last year was there were at least a dozen MPs who were not pleased.
Yeah.
So
where do they go? They go over to the other parties who are engaged in the same thing themselves.
Well, yeah, they are. But you see, at least we get a break and we get the opportunity to start shouting out some things. We get the opportunity to ask some things. And without having to cope with the fact that, you know, somebody's running roughshod over us for 5 minutes, we can actually shout and make some points across. I mean, people can go to town hall meetings and literally shatter politicians' images overnight if they go and ask the right questions.
Yeah.
And we need all of them to do it, and we need the whistleblowers to do it. We need to bring that out. If you're going to make any use whatsoever of an election, that's what you use it for. Because it sure ain't to find governors.
And all the elections are controlled by the corporate media.
Yeah, but not the town hall meetings.
Yeah. Yeah, local level is important to act on.
Yeah, Global Mail, I guess, phoned me the other day. They were looking, you know, they're looking for fishing for subscriptions, right? And I just gave them an earful.
Oh, good for you. What'd you say?
Why would I? You know, it's just, toward the, you know, and I you imagine yourself talking, you know, if you had their ear. They're, you know, it's just the person at the front desk, but nonetheless, you know, you could hear the click, and then it's like, okay, they've, you know, hot phone call. Let's listen in on it. Careful. I mean, you know, they're going around fishing for subscriptions. Why? Because people aren't listening anymore. Well, not everybody, but certain. I said, you know, you have lost an important segment of your readership. I said, I love to talk about this stuff. The news I really care about. I go meet with people every week, and we share stories. But none of your stuff, because it's all lies and it misleads, and you know, and it's not helpful to me. I said, so I just thought that was kind of fun.
That's hilarious.
Fishing for subscriptions, and they really have lost a meaningful readership simply because I just don't read it. I share it.
Exactly.
You know,
well,
I
you know what?
There's
a reason why they're called prostitutes, isn't there?
Yes.
Well.
You know, that's what they're called because they do prostitution for money.
Yeah.
Right? They sell lies for money.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing. And, you know, we have a number of people, and I, you know, people like Alex Jones, I don't like him.
No,
sorry, Alex, but you know what? He's just too over the top for me and too blustery, and I want to hear something calm, rational, and logical. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
You want to get emphatic and passionate about it, by all means, but I want to hear rational and logical, and I don't want to hear all this garbage. So, you know, there's people that we need to support and support fully. And, you know, we need to give these people an alternative place to work even. Because some of them can't
speak. Yeah, I know, it's setting up. There's things are coming. You know, I've heard a couple of stuff, offshoots from the Ron Paul movement where they've set up their own TV stations. David Icke has got something going on. Also,
Natural News.
Ben Swan, you know Ben Swan.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, and I said that to you. I said, you know, this is going to be hot for some because the alternative media isn't just media. We're audiences. We're literally people who are had to just go out and fish for news for ourselves simply because there's been an absence of trained people, you know, people who are actually going to set their life up to do this. And the situation is ripe for a legitimate reporter, investigative reporter to come out, and you'll see lots of ready-made audience. There you go with Ben Swan.
Yeah, not to mention the fact literally what we are is we are a network. We are a network. And what we do is, you know, it's like somebody gives me some truth, what do? I pass it on. And what do the people do that I pass it on to? They pass it on.
I mean, look at Ben Swan's case. He was just a reporter from some local newspaper, but because of the internet and because of what he was saying, he became world famous without the help of any, you know, mainstream media, corporate media to push his stuff. He's got followers from all over the world.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar
with that. Listen to his broadcast.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's only one of many. You know, there are many
people.
Yeah, and
more will come.
And more will come.
And they see, wow, but, this is, you know, I can actually make a living at this.
Yeah, well, wouldn't that be nice? Holy crap. struggle, she said.
You're looking at a situation.
Sorry?
I said it's sorting itself out.
Of course it is. Of course it is. But, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it's going to take time. It's a process. It's not, you know, you can't whitewash it all overnight.
And increasingly, the whole thing just becomes irrelevant.
Politics
and politicians become, you know, the federal level, the higher parts of the government just become irrelevant.
Yeah, well, the degree of relevance is becoming interesting because it's not a constant. You know, what's relevant today isn't relevant tomorrow. And people are even getting confused on that level. And one of the reasons for that is the technique of divide and conquer. And you know what that's all about, both of you. You know, it's like, okay, let's have them chase this issue over here and that issue over there and this issue over here. There's 9 million issues and 9 million causes, and by the time we get all these little mice in a maze all occupied, they won't be effective at anything.
Yeah.
Or they may be effective, you know, or they may be. I mean, you know, how many, you know, it's just 300 million people in America, you know.
Yeah, well, actually, 330 million.
30 million.
Yeah, well, that's lot of people. That's a lot of people, and you only need about, 10% to start a cascade, 30% is a tipping point, and then you're done for. But, you know, it's
already there.
Sorry?
I said it's already there, the situation, you know, and from what I understand, too, it's not like every home in America has an internet connection. They all have cable, apparently. So we're in America, in Canada, yeah, there's a greater percentage of the population has internet connection. So there's still waves of people yet to be introduced to this entire medium that exists.
Exactly.
We were always
better informed up here, but 86% of Canadian homes have internet connection.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a huge,
It's not so in the United States, which means
it's
you still got waves and waves of people.
But, it's not anywhere near that in the States. It wasn't, but now it is because of the iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
People who didn't have the internet before now have it through their iPhones and their iPads. And so they're paying a lot, you know, instead of paying for just a cell phone, $50 a month, they're getting iPad for $70 a month. They got the whole Magilla and the iPhone. They got the whole Magilla, and it's mobile. So while I hope they're not holding it up to their bodies a lot, and I hope they're not using it to excess so they irradiate themselves into a cancer, but by the same token, use a ding plastic thing for more than Facebook, would you please? You know?
They will. A certain percentage will. a certain percentage will not gravitate towards pornography and MP3s and that. A certain percentage will gravitate exactly as I did and you did, which is to helpful information, information that will help us to survive.
Yes, and from your mouth to God's ears, and may that percentage be large.
Yeah.
You know? Because, I mean, we're talking about, we're almost at critical mass, aren't we? You know,
sometimes
I don't know.
Sometimes it seems like it, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, you got that right. Well, sometimes the match lights, and sometimes it won't. It's not in our hands, is it? I mean, all we can do is, you know, just kind of point it in the right direction and pray.
Yeah.
That's all we can do. And that's, again, that's our responsibility is point ourselves in the right direction and just keep doing the right thing, and the right things will result. And it's like it says even in the Bible, it says, for those who are faithful, meaning to the law of karma,
mm-hmm.
okay, there will be a cleft in the rock to protect mm-hmm. you. Well, what does that really mean? Well, it's karma that protects you. If you've done no harm, how can harm come to you? If you planted corn, how are you going to get beans?
Well, you can in this life. You see all the innocent
genetic people. Modification. Yes, genetic modification. We have corny beans.
But, you know, sometimes I think a soldier is talked into going and killing somebody, but that's only the physical part. Oh, it stopped moving. It's dead. Well, that's only the part that you can see.
That's
physically
right.
See. God knows what else you have not killed. You know, what else is out there of that person that at some point can, you know, bring about other consequences to your life. That's
mm-hmm.
That's the part I always think is, like, you're only seeing what the person that's dead now, that's only the physical aspect of it. Did you kill their soul? Did you kill their ethereal body? Did you kill that? That's all still there. You know?
Do you even know there are such things? It would be another question.
Well,
you know. I know a lot.
Definitely.
A lot of people believe in this or that, but, you know, comes time for their own physical death, what do they go into? Fear?
Yes.
So how strong was that initial belief? How strong was their faith?
Well, they know what they've put up in heaven for themselves.
Yeah. Well, maybe they do. Maybe that's when they expect to get their just desserts. I say it's gonna hit you when you least expect it, but in a way that does your soul the most good.
Yeah.
Because the only way the universe can speak to us is through sign language. It either pats us on the head or kicks us in the butt, one of the two. We're supposed to pick which one we like more.
Mm-hmm. But there's you hear that the soldier is committing suicide. I mean, they're already right there. Right there. I mean, they were basically convinced that they could go out into the battlefield, gouge their own eyes out, and then come back and still see.
Yeah.
You know? And they realize, my God, I can't. You can't.
Yeah.
You know, so when what happens? You end up turning the gun on yourself because...
Exactly.
Because, you know, boot camp was sort of like, will get you upset, and now last for, like, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks in the battlefield.
Well, they dehumanize you,
literally.
And then
all of a sudden, all of society and all the morals that society has taught you comes back again.
Yeah, well, they
you know,
literally
dehumanize
you. And anything military or paramilitary, they dehumanize you, they desensitize you. And right now you may have seen it yourself, but what I'm hearing is that in some of the training programs for officers of the, quote, law, end quote, are being trained by having them shoot at pregnant women and children in order to desensitize them to the targets. And basically how they're justifying that is by saying, we have seen how children and women are used as carriers of bombs. So you have to be ready to shoot these people.
Yeah, all the bombs carried by pregnant women, sure.
Yeah, if you're pregnant, you're sure going to go and get a bomb. Yeah, sure. Like, what mother is going to do that? You know, what mother is going to do that?
all this dehumanizing that you're talking about, even MK Ultra victims, they still seem to get back to some, not that they get back to normal, but they it seems it's not effective after a certain age. So it's not like they wipe out the humanity. They just seem to be able to mess it up for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, well,
so again, it'll come back. I mean, you'll come back to the societies. The society will suffer because members, you know, were for a certain amount of time dehumanized and carried out these atrocious activities and come back and have to pay for it.
Yeah.
Consciously.
Well, Kathy O'Brien is a friend of mine. And she is an MK Ultra victim.
Yeah.
But and you know, having met and spoken with her a couple of times and emailed back and forth for years, I can tell you that to my mind, Kathy doesn't do a damn thing without Mark's approval. And Mark is the CIA handler, and you know, who eventually married her and, you know, supposedly saved her. But by the same token, I've also heard that once you're in the firm, you don't leave. And people have asked him to his face, "You're still with the CIA, aren't you?" And he won't answer.
Wow.
He won't answer. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's a whole bunch of other things. So if they've been involved in mind control programs, you're right. They start losing their grip on these people when they hit 30. 30 is the cutoff age, apparently. But what's really happening is as people mature, they start to think more critically. And the minute you start thinking critically, you can crack all these things. And even Edward Bernays, who's the father of propaganda, says that right in the first chapter, right? if you want to crack the paradigm, right, just think critically and follow the money, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, my book, my little book, Lies Your Ego Told You, is designated by Kathy and Mark as anti-mind control because it teaches critical thought. That's what it teaches, is critical thought. So as we mature, this is what we become able to do. And unfortunately, if you look around, what you see is in the collective, people aren't allowed to think critically, are they? So that's what makes the collective approach so very powerful, because your measure of self-worth then becomes whether or not you support the group and how well you support the group. And it doesn't have anything to do with original thought. Original thought is critical thought. And we all need to use our heads for more than a hat rack, as you clearly do, and Asenae and Christopher, both of you, have, you know, you're people who are using your heads for more than a hat rack. And we all need to do that. Because if we don't, we're dead.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Barbie out of my friend Barbie, and I don't want to use her last name because she'd freak out. But my friend from BC says, she says, these days, if you're not an activist, you're a victim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's a horrifying statement on its own, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
It seems to be the thing of this generation.
Yeah.
Activism.
Yeah. When they come around with a rifle, I'm pointing at my forehead saying, "Hey, right here, don't miss." Yes, quite frankly.
We've got a bit of a schism in our society, you're right.
Yeah.
It's the people who are reacting to, you know, the environment, what's happening, political situation, current affairs.
What do you think? Is schism really a big enough word, Asenae?
The divide, the chasm.
Yeah, a chasm is like the Grand Canyon. It's a huge schism. You're absolutely right. That's exactly what's going on. There's a schism going on. I've been schismed to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
Odd way to go.
Well, you know, just keep on doing what we got to do, and it'll sort itself out. I mean, and if it doesn't, I mean, it will. I mean, there's, you know, it sorts itself out one way or another. I think that the powers that should not be are just doing something that empires have always tried to do, which is rule. Sometimes they're successful and sometimes they're not, but all the time they, like a natural human being, they die too. They'll have their time, and yeah. and they waste away.
Yeah.
So what's going to be in the wake of it? There's going to be localized people who can you know, will operate on a township. More city states will probably be something of the future.
Well, you know what?
These megalith countries.
Well, when you have
it's easier to identify with a city than a country.
Yeah. Well, when you have a crisis, what do? You micromanage. That's your best way through any kind of a crisis is to micromanage. And that the only way you can micromanage anything is to have it small enough that it's manageable.
Yeah.
Right? So what we should be doing, and this is kind of interesting because FEMA is, believe it or not, but also a friend of mine who runs a charity up here called the Canadian Emergency Preparedness Association. What they're doing is they're teaching team leaders in communities to be, you know, people who can go around and help their neighbors in the case of a flood or a power outage or this or that. They can actually get on, they're on the ground already. They're right there where the crisis is, and they can help people to get into some kind of a more safe position before the first responders get there, which sometimes can be a long time. So if you're looking at how FEMA manages or wants us to manage our own emergencies, that's exactly what they're saying. Get small real quick.
Yeah.
Get small, because small can be handled. Small isn't overwhelming. Small is dealable, and we can all deal with it. So get small. And, you know, focus first on your own family, then you focus on your neighbors and your community and your, you know, your block, your area. And as you do that, well, you know what? Things get handled. And this is what the charity is. Oh, actually, we'll have to have John on one day.
Yeah, good.
To talk about this, because it's getting to the point where we all need to prepare for something. We may not know what it is, but with floods, Calgary's underwater.
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean,
down to the end of the show here, I would like Asana to give out her websites. Asana,
sure,
would you mind going just outlining that?
Wait, let
okay,
me get
sure.
my pen.
Okay, yeah. CanadaSkyWatch.com, and that is an archive of interviews, lectures, documentaries, eyewitness reports, and music, everything to do with chemtrails. And Vancouver Skywatch is a growing list of an index of chemtrail websites from all over the world, social network groups, anything that's set up by people, a link. So it's rather than going to Google and punching in chemtrails, you can just go to Vancouver Skywatch and get a really long list.
Yeah.
And it's sorted out by regions as well. So,
and these are .com?
Pardon?
CanadaSkyWatch.com.
Yes, CanadaSkyWatch.com and VancouverSkyWatch.com.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for being with us today, Asana, and good luck in your work out there in the West Coast. And
yes, thank you so much
thank
for
you
what
so
you
much.
Do, my dear.
It was a pleasure.
Well, you're awesome. You're lots of fun to have on, and you know we'll have you back again for sure.
Yeah.
For
thank
sure.
you. It was great. Thank you a lot.
Okay. Thanks. And Dee, did you have anything you wanted to give out, your email address or a website or anything?
Well, although it's not as active as I would like it to be, dnicholson.wordpress.com is my blog site, and I will be posting up a lot of stuff that I've run into over the last couple of weeks. I just haven't gotten around to it because things have been a bit crazy.
Yeah.
But it's dnicholson.wordpress.com.
Okay.
It's my blog page.
So that's the end of our show today. My website is at www.zeropoint.ca. And we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
With more fun and games.
Yeah, more fun and games, eh? Okay, thanks a lot, Dee.
Well, thank you, Christopher, and everybody out there, take care, be safe, and be aware. Please
yeah.
wake up, everybody, and if you are awake, wake somebody else up today.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.